Coming up on the Wells Tech Podcast, Sally and I continue our discussion and review of the book, The Church of Facebook. We chat a little bit about the passing of Steve Jobs, his impact on the industry, and maybe more importantly, our impact on ministry by using technology. And keeping with the Apple theme, both of our picks are iOS-based, so stay tuned for the next episode of the Wells Tech Podcast, episode 205 for October 12th, 2011. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, for another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, October 12th. This is episode 2005. Joining me is...
I hope not, Martin. 205, maybe?
Let's try 205.
There you go.
That would be an accomplishment, wouldn't it?
I'd be really gray-haired if that was the case.
Well, we may accelerate the podcast each week, so maybe you want to do 2-3 a week, maybe?
I don't think so.
Okay. One is enough, and the voice on the other end of the microphone is Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Just trying to keep you honest here.
That's
from
right.
Sleepy
I
Eye.
I appreciate that. So I need that. I need that a lot. Well, good to be back again, and we are returning to our conversation that we started last month. Those of you that are longtime listeners remember that we, from time to time, take a look at a book and do a book review of sorts. I don't know if I'd call it a review. It's kind of a chapter by chapter, blow by blow. We pick a book that either you or I have read, in the recent past, and pick it for different reasons. Sometimes they're purely ministry related, sometimes technology, and sometimes both, which is, I think, the book that we are reviewing right now by Jesse Rice, The Church of Facebook. He goes through the kind of the social engineering that is Facebook, and relates that in a theological way to how God has put us together. And that's really the topic of this chapter. We're on actually chapter one. We did the introduction last month, and now we're on chapter one, which is called Connection. And I reread it again, and very insightful, I think, lays a nice foundation for how we might want to understand this phenomenon called Facebook and why it seems to be so popular.
Yeah, this chapter probably really isn't about Facebook,
no.
But like you said, laying the foundation.
He only mentions Facebook in the last three paragraphs, I think.
That's right. So, but it does look at what makes people happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really interesting way to start. He talks about the area of psychology that's always been focused on depression and,
right.
and bad
things. What's wrong
things
with
in
you
people's
and how to
lives.
Fix it, yes.
And instead, somebody decided to shift things around and take a look at what makes people happy. And there's been various studies. And, interestingly enough, it's not wealth, it's not education, it's not youth. Fullness or sunshine or any of the things that you might expect would make people happy. But ultimately, the word for the day is connection. And being connected to others is what ultimately leads to happiness.
Mm-hmm. And that makes a lot of sense when you think about what Facebook is and isn't. And as he progresses through the chapter, he talks about a couple of experiments, social experiments that were run one for a set of primates, some monkeys, and put them in two different situations, one with kind of a surrogate, two surrogate mothers, one kind of a wire-framed, cold mother that did provide food, and another that was more soft and more ape-like, but without food. And it was interesting that, they would obviously go and grab the food from the mother who provided it, but at the end of the day, when they felt some discomfort or where they wanted to spend most of their day, was with the soft and cuddly mother, and they made a connection there.
Right. And the other psychological experiment that he described was something done by the BBC mm-hmm. in England, where they took six people and put them in a sensory deprivation situation for 48 hours, for 2 days. They were in rooms that were either completely dark or rooms that had some light, but their vision was distorted and they couldn't feel things and things like that. And he described the response of each of the people going into this, that, you know, they were pretty with it kind of people, and they pretty much crumbled under the 48-hour time frame of being disconnected from the world in that way.
Right. And, you know, through all of this, it was, you know, the point was that our connectivity to others really is the key. In fact, sometimes in the case of the experiments made here, even more so important than some what other scientists have called, you know, more basic needs, like food, and where people do not have those, the need of connection met, then all kinds of disorders appear and things just get turned upside down.
I thought Jesse did a really good job of tying that to our connection with God mm-hmm. and the fact that God created us to be connected to Him. Unfortunately, with the fall into sin in the Garden of Eden, that connection was destroyed. But as you and I know, you know, Jesus Christ reconnected us to God through our faith, and we are very thankful for that. But it just is so true that God created us to be connected, not just with Him, but He made Adam a suitable helper and established a connection there in the garden between us and other humans. Mm-hmm. So connection goes all the way back to the beginning.
Yep. There's a couple interesting quotes I wanted to mention here just after his section about the Harlow's experience with the Horizon 6. That was the six sensory deprivation subjects that went through this 48-hour period without human contact. He says, apart from connection, we fall to pieces. Our decision-making ability gets cloudy. Our way of viewing the world becomes skewed. We question our ability to cope. Are we going crazy? Will we be able to make it? Am I truly alone? Disconnection seems to leave us locked in little rooms with no light source and no sense of when the madness will end, but it also reminds us of how connection truly is. And we've talked about that both on the social level with connecting with each other, and there obviously is the Facebook connection, but as you mentioned and he mentioned, you know, our connection to God. And when we don't have that, things do fall to pieces and we wonder how we're going to make it. And you know, great analogies, and he carries that through the book as well. And then ultimately, the tie to Facebook is, well, what's so special, you know, about Facebook? You know, there are different kinds of connections. There are different people we want to connect to. But what makes Facebook maybe a little bit different is it reminds us of home. It is a place where we feel safe. It's a place where we like to spend time. It's filled with people that we want to connect to. So it's really the quality of the relationship, not just interaction with people for the sake of interaction or connectedness, but the fact that there are quality relationships that are homey there that make us feel comfortable.
Absolutely. You know, I'm new to this book. I'm reading along with our listeners, not something I had been exposed to previously. I think Jesse really has me thinking already right off the bat in chapter one. I was looking at ministry situations and the different challenges that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, either in personal or public ministry, and all the brokenness in this world. And really, I think it probably, at least a lot of the sin and brokenness of the world boils down to the fact that people are looking for easy connections. They have that desire to connect, but maybe they aren't making the wisest choices about those connections.
Mm-hmm. So if you would like to follow along at home, it is the Church of Facebook. It's on bookstore shelves. It's available in Kindle format, which is the version that I'm reading. It's also available in audio format, and all of those, I think we have links to all those on the show notes page. So if you want to grab a copy and follow along at home, then feel free to do that. Should we move on to news and tech, Sally?
Yes, this was quite the newsy week for the technology world with the recent death of Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple Computer. And boy, did it get a lot of response across the tech spectrum from Twitter and all the articles and blog posts written.
Yep, it's hard to ignore. Certainly what Steve Jobs did with his life was something that the tech industry, whether you are an Apple devotee or not, you have to admit that what he did to the industry was revolutionary. Some would call him the inventor of the personal computer, or at least part of that. And certainly the person who made it more, put it into the hands of the average consumer. And then with all the recent inventions, that he has made possible over the last, especially 10 years, with the iPad, the iPod, the iPhone, all of those things, which are in the hands of many, many people, including your two hosts, it's made a huge difference in that particular segment of our society.
Probably making news a lot more is the fact that Steve had pancreatic cancer, and he made some pretty bold statements about life and death. And a lot of people are looking to his statements out there as being something worthy of considering or pondering or whatever with his recent death. Yep. So especially, I guess, a commencement speech that he gave at Stanford in 2005 is one that's been really quoted quite
a bit. Yeah, let me play just a quick clip of that. I think it's worthy of our consideration because, here's a technologist squarely in that camp, but we know as Christians, and that's really what our podcast is about, is where technology meets ministry. That technology is more than that. It is a gift from God. So it's interesting to hear somebody who is admittedly not a Christian talk about death and a person's impact on the world. So let me play a little bit of that speech that he made to the graduates at Stanford in 2005.
But my wife, who was there, told me that when they viewed the cells under a microscope, the doctor started crying because it turned out to be a very rare form of pancreatic cancer that is curable with surgery. I had the surgery, and thankfully, I'm fine now. This was the closest I've been to facing death, and I hope it's the closest I get for a few more decades. Having lived through it, I can now say this to you with a bit more certainty than when death was a useful but purely intellectual concept. No one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there. And yet, death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it. And that is as it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. It's life's change agent. It clears out the old to make way for the new. Right now, the new is you. But someday, not too long from now, you will gradually become the old and be cleared away. Sorry to be so dramatic, but it's quite true. Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary.
And we'll stop it there. I read that. There were obviously when the news came out across Twitter and all over the place, my RSS reader was filled with it. That was one of the quotes that I read, and I scratched my head because I didn't know what if he was a Christian or not at the time, and wondered, well, what does that mean? And when I thought about his life, then really what he was about was making the life of the technology user better. I mean, that was clear in every product that he made. So that was his life's goal, to do things, to provide things that would would make our lives easier, would make our lives better. But Sally, as we talk about technology, we kind of have a little bit different goal for the use of technology, and that's to hopefully have some eternal benefit, you know, to its listeners, whether that be through websites or podcasts or whatever, you name it, whatever other kind of technology. There really is only one purpose for those things that God has given us, and that is to share the gospel and to bring as many people into the family of God as possible through whatever means, as Paul would say.
Yep, you could follow up that comment, Martin, with what Steve ended with. Everything else is secondary.
Right.
It's not secondary to what Steve thinks it should be secondary to, but the fact that it's all about heaven. It's all about salvation through Jesus Christ.
And
that's why technology is such a gift.
Right. So I guess it always puts things into perspective, and it's always good to think about things a little bit more deeply as we think about what we do, whether we are in a ministry position or whether we just talk about technology, on a Tuesday morning, whatever it is, there is a reason, that God has allowed us to do this, and that's important to remember. So let's move forward. In that light, then, we should probably do our picks of the week, Sally.
Sure. Mine is actually an iPad pick this week. It is the MindJet app for iPad, which MindJet is a mind mapping tool, allows you to brainstorm basically and draw things out kind of visually in a mind map format. And they have come out with a free app for iPads, so you don't have to have the mind mapping software from MindJet or anything to make use of this free app on your iPad. It's really intuitive to use. I tried it out actually in an early morning. Sometimes you wake up and you have a lot of ideas going, and so it was an early morning session with mind mapping, and even in my blurry brain of the early morning, I was able to do a pretty good job compiling my ideas that were floating around.
Nice. You can help to focus a little bit.
Yeah, you can add, subtopics. You can drag things around to organize it. Works a lot like very typical mind mapping software. It's pretty easy to get started with. So I was really pleased with the performance of the app. It also will sync to a Dropbox account. So if you put in your Dropbox credentials, you can save your mind maps into your Dropbox folder and be able to download them to your computer from there if that's what you need to do. If you have the Mind Manager software, then you can edit them further in your software, or you can get a Mind Manager reader and be able to just view them and make use of them on the local computer. I think I mentioned the app is free. That's my favorite price point for iPad app, so there's no reason not to go out and give it a try, and we'll have a link in the show notes.
Yep, and speaking with my productivity hat on, I think mind mapping is really an essential tool for anybody who is doing any kind of brainstorming or even meeting management, just capturing ideas, organizing them, making them make a little bit more sense, and communicating that. So great tool, and now that you've got something that can go with you, that's more of a portable tool, that's a nice addition to the iPad. So
absolutely, and the whole syncing with the Dropbox actually would allow you to share it with others through Dropbox as well.
Right,
so, if you're brainstorming, or maybe you're doing a podcast and you want to use a mind map for that, there's a novel idea.
We have about 205 of those little mind maps, don't we?
We do, not 2005.
Not 2005. Yes.
Okay.
Well, keeping with the Steve Jobs iPad Apple type theme, my pick is the Wells Online app, which I built probably 6 to 8 months ago now. The version one actually is on Android as well. Nothing yet for BlackBerry or Windows 7. But it was time to upgrade. One of the reasons it was time to upgrade is that the tool that I used to build version 1 wasn't playing so nicely with the new iOS 5 upcoming upgrade. I downloaded the beta and made sure that the app would work, and it didn't. would not play a number of things on it. So it was time to switch gears. So in the process, we did a complete overhaul. We did a redesign and now have launched, as of yesterday, the Wells Online app version 2. And one of the benefits of going with the new production tool that I used is that it also creates an iPad-friendly version. So
Yay.
Now if you go on the iTunes store and search for Wells Online, you can download not only the iPhone or iPod Touch version, but it also works nicely on the iPad and should work just fine on iOS 4 or iOS 5. A couple additions that were made. One, we included the Wells Radio channel. For those of you familiar with Wells.net and have gone to the Streams Media section, you notice that we have a radio section with a number of channels there where you can play music from contemporary artists, Wells contemporary artists, or choral music, or instrumental is on there, kids music. All those are on there, and you can play music from your favorite Wells musicians throughout the day right on your iPod or iPad at this point. And some of that music you hear right on this show at the end of the show, that all gets played over Wells Streams Radio. So that was in addition. We've got some social networking things on there, and looking forward to building out some other things. It should be, hopefully, on Android in the coming months. I can't give you a date at this point, but the refresh should reach to Android phones as well. But for right now, iOS users only have version 2 of the application. So take a look at that.
I have it on both of my Apple devices, and we listened to Devotion from it this morning at the family breakfast table. Worked great.
Nice. Spread the word. And then post a note in iTunes. The more ratings we get, the more attractive that may be for maybe non-Wells people to grab it and listen to some of those great devotions or Bible readings, those kinds of things. So,
very good. Thanks for your work on that, Martin.
Oh, my pleasure. Let's move on to community feedback, Sally. We have a lot of it this week.
We do, and you'll have to check our show notes for all these great links. We're going to buzz through a bunch here. Starting with a link Perry Lund sent me to Intel's free resources for teachers and for education, and they have all kinds of things. They have different tools available, like assessing projects, showing evidence tool, designing effective projects. They have teacher lesson plans available, different curriculum that you can make use of, and all of this for free from the Intel website. So if you're of that education mindset, this is a page you want to check out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Perry.
Next up, a whole slew of links from DIGO, many of them also education-focused. There's studyboost.com. I'm just bringing it up. You can study on your mobile device or use your favorite social site. So study using text messaging and instant messaging. Sounds interesting. I guess a new way to reach those that are of the text generation. So a couple of links from PBS. There's a teacher site for PBS teachers, technology integration, and all kinds of evaluation and lesson plans and internet safety, a lot of different topics covered on that site. And then also a restructured, newly formatted game site from PBS Kids. PBS Kids does have a lot of great games, reading games from Between the Lions and Curious George games. They're kind of all over the spectrum for preschool through lower elementary games, basically. And they've reorganized that on their website, and you'll want to check that out as well. Through DIGO, we heard from, I think this was from Jason Schmidt, the Family Safety Resources, Focus on the Family, has a new web page that he found about protecting your family and different resources around that. Social networking checklist, put your family values back into your movie nights,
Nice.
Internet safety, building character and building walls. Lots of great resources there from Focus on the Family. Jason also shared links to a couple of different wikis, and these are school or district specific wikis related to mobile devices in the classroom. One's called Get Happy with the app stressed in the word happy. And so they're sharing a bunch of different mobile applications that you could use for education. And the other one is from a particular school district. Let's see which one this is. Fort Calhoun. And apparently they are doing iPads in the classroom. So they have an iPad wiki space where they're teaching about iPads and also sharing different applications applicable for the classroom. And then finally, a link to a whole ton of copyright-free and public domain media sources. So a lot of images, but also video media, and all of it either copyright-free or public domain. So you could make use of it in different presentations or classroom projects or whatever it may be. And these span all different categories. They've got a lot of historical images, things from national parks, from NASA, from weather, maps and flags, geology, disasters. They've got lots and lots of images linked to here on this webpage. So nice. This is one of those treasure chest kind of webpages. You want to make sure you bookmark this one for future use.
If I mentioned how much I love Diego, it is just a great way to share links. And there's just a reminder to our listeners, if you're not on Diego, maybe you want to consider getting over there, Diigo, social bookmarking site. And we do have a group for our Wells Techers. Well, it's called Wells Tech. You can easily join the group. And then when you find a link that you want to share, just go ahead and tag it for that group. And then we put it on the show. Just did that earlier today with, and maybe this is maybe something it's probably too late to get in the show, but there was a link in, I get that Tech and Learning magazine, so it's more kind of focused on education tools here. And this one is particularly relevant because it is an article on the top 20 social networks for education on the Tech and Learn site. So I plugged that into my Digo, and now I have that, and I share that with the Wells Tech group, and great resources here as well. So there's a plugin that you put right into Chrome or IE or whatever, and out pops a little button that you can click and bookmark and highlight and all that other good stuff. So check that out.
Great tool. I actually did a staff development workshop yesterday at St. Paul's in New Ulm, and that was kind of my finale. Maybe I should have done it first, because by then they were pretty glassy-eyed, but it's hard to get it unless you just get an account and start making use of Digo. And after about 10 or 20 or 30 bookmarks, all of a sudden it becomes your brain. And you can get to it in the cloud and access those bookmarks from anywhere. So it's very valuable.
Yeah, whenever I do presentations, that's how I put the links together. And I just share a public list of bookmarks that they can go and grab, so I don't have to put a list together on a web page or whatever. Digo does it for me, and they can get them whether they have a Digo account or not. And then I always have them, too. I can always go back to them and refer to them, tag them, and just a neat and annotate and all those tools that Digo brings to the table as well. So,
very good. All right. Next up, we heard from our very own near and dear Julie Duran, who serves as the webmaster for the Wells websites, and she shared a link to 10 tools to combine, mix, blend multiple RSS feeds. So it's basically taking RSS feeds from multiple locations. Maybe you have several favorite tech blogs or whatever it is, and combining them into one feed that you could then post somewhere, perhaps on your website or whatever. So check out this article. It's from To the PC, and we'll have a link in our show notes.
Yeah, another use for that is if you have multiple RSS feeds on your own site, let's say you have audio sermons and video sermons and blog content and other devotional content, newsletter content, and they all have RSS feeds, which is possible with Final Web or others. You can bring them all together into one big RSS feed, so somebody, if they want to know everything about St. John's and Sleepy Eye and all the RSS feeds that you have, you can combine them into one. So they don't have to subscribe to multiples. They just get the one and they get it all. So that's what that's one of the reasons Julie was investigating it for Wells.net, because we have probably 20 or 30 RSS feeds, and it would be nice if somebody were just interested in just everything that we've got on the website, that's what these are good for.
Very good. All right. We had a community question that I wanted to throw out to our listeners this week. It was from David Arndt, and he's basically looking to do some closed circuit camera work. So being able to have a camera feed from the school gym over to the cafeteria, that kind of thing. And so far, he hasn't been really pleased with the different camera devices that he's tested out for this. He's just getting some jerky video. It's not real great quality and that kind of thing. And he says he has it hardwired into the network, but it's still not adequate. The video coverage is just not good enough for him. So he's wondering about any advice on IP cameras that our listeners may have to share.
Yeah, and that's an area that I have not got a lot of experience with, and it seems like it should be a very doable thing, you know, where he doesn't want to put this over a hard wire like a VGA cable or S-Video, something like that, but he wants to use his network, you know, to transmit that video, which it can be pretty network heavy, so I'm not sure what the solutions are, but there are a bunch of them out there that I've seen, and some of them are pretty inexpensive. So if somebody has any experience with that, that would be welcomed, I'm sure, by Dave and others.
Absolutely. Okay, a couple of Twitter links to share. If you want to talk to us on Twitter, you can always use the hashtag #PoundWellsTech. And someone did that this week. Maybe these are from Jason Schmidt. He shared a link to The Myth of Online Predators, which is an interesting read, basically saying it's not there's not just predators hanging around every corner trying to trap your children. They have to be probably in the wrong place at the right time kind of thing to really get exposed to that kind of thing. But there are other things that you need to be concerned about with children on the internet and safety precautions you should be taking. But I think this was an interesting article that Jason shared. And then he also tweeted a link to the Side-by-Side app, another application for the iPad. This one allows you to put two different views in the same window. So perhaps two different browser sessions in your own two different websites, and you can see them side by side. Jason said he brought up Bible Gateway in each one of the sides of his window and was able to have the NIV 2011 in one column and the NIV 1984 in the other and have those two views side by side on his iPad. So an interesting use of the side by side app, and I'm sure there's lots more you could do with it. We'll have a link in the show notes. It is a free download, so if you want to try it out.
Very good. Thanks, Jason.
And then finally, we'll wrap up our community feedback with a comment from Leslie Bergerman, who's over at, is it Good Shepherd in West Dallas?
Good Shepherd's West Dallas.
And Leslie is using the RSS Graffiti app on Facebook. That's one that we make use of as well and one that we've recommended on the podcast. And what that does is takes an RSS feed, say, from your website and adds it automatically to your Facebook page. We use it to automatically update each time there's a new podcast. It shows up on the Wells Tech Facebook page. Well, recently, Facebook made some changes to their security settings, and apparently it's affecting the RSS Graffiti app. And what's happening is the RSS feed is still showing up. For instance, when a new podcast comes out, it's still there on the Facebook page like you'd expect it to be for Wells Tech, but it's not showing in the individual people's homepage view of Facebook. So it's not making it into their streams that are on their homepage. Those that like the Wells Tech podcast would have to come to the Wells Tech page to see the new content, not necessarily see it.
Purpose, yes.
Right. And I did a little reading. There's a lot of disgruntled people posting on their discussion boards for the RSS Graffiti app. I'm guessing that they're scrambling, trying to get a solution and get back into Facebook's good graces with their new security settings. And it sounded like a few people had it working again. So I'm not quite sure what the status is. It seems the developers have been dramatically silent in the whole complaining process with all these people trying to resolve this. So I think we can just kind of stay tuned for that one. I'm guessing that they'll get it fixed. They referenced other similar apps, and they're all having the same problems since Facebook made this change of their security in late September. So we'll see how this all kind of plays out.
Yeah, and it's such a useful feature for us, for sure. And I think many people, even churches, would love to be able to push automatically, you know, their RSS content from their website into their Facebook page rather than to have to manually enter that each time. That's a bummer.
Right. And, you know, it is getting pushed to the page. It's just not then getting into the liker stream. But they did say if you do manually.
To go to the website. Yeah.
Yeah, if you do manually add the links, then that will get into their stream.
All right.
But that really defeats the purpose.
Exactly. So, is that it for community feedback, Sally?
That'll do it for this week.
Okay. Keep them coming. WellsTech.Wells.net is a place where you can find all kinds of ways to get in touch with us. If you look across the top right corner, you'll see all kinds of links and ways to get in touch with us, that Facebook link, Twitter links. The listserv, the WellsTech listserv, which has a lot of activity, and many, many other ways, including just good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net, if you want to communicate with us. So keep them coming. Next week.
Talk about next week.
Let's talk about next week. We had an email from Pastor Clint Rogas from Michigan comparing VoIP applications. I think we brought this up in a show not too long ago, and I think it was in reference to the Magic Jack application. Did we bring that up on the show, or was
I think
just,
you did, Martin?
Maybe I did.
You were talking about Magic Jack, and Clint said, "Okay, well, how is that different from Google
Skype.
Voice and Skype?
Right.
You know, what's up with all these different ways of using VoIP?" So,
So next week we thought we'd spend a little time talking about these VoIP apps and comparing and contrasting the pluses and minuses, you know, what's good about Skype, what can Magic Jack do that Skype can't, etc. Because I think many of our listeners are very familiar with the concept of VoIP and making long-distance conversations more inexpensive or free. And I think there's some value in considering some of these solutions for a church or a school, or certainly in your personal use as well. So tune in next week for a VoIP conversation.
Looking forward to it. They're all kind of different animals, so
they
it'll
are.
Be interesting to, maybe we can do some kind of site of comparative chart or something.
Mm-hmm. You like charts. I like charts
I do.
Too. So that's the left brain side of us.
There you go.
Let's close the show with the music of Dawn Michelle Williams, Where I Belong, from her album Dawn Michelle Williams. Thanks everybody for joining us. Talk to you next week. Thank you.